And I have a very special knowledge of the Middle East, so I'm not going to talk a lot about that. But what I'm telling you here, these are things that I knew what was going to happen in the end because of the Bible. And a long time ago, in 1992, this is when I first started teaching about this. And I want to tell you that I know for a fact that we happened to hack the Russians before they ever hacked us. And I know that to be a fact because I helped. There were two of us that broke Chinese and Russian codes. And we got involved in something to where we had to, they gave us a bunch of codes and stuff. And the company that that actually made the computer, they didn't have anybody with high enough clearance to come in there. So they put us on it. We almost went crazy. But we finally broke them. And when they did, anybody had any kind of a problem like that, they always brought them to us. And it just about drive you crazy. I caught myself one time trying to walk up an escalator backwards. We were trying to do some things, and I can't talk to you about them. I can't tell you about them. But I know why he's waited before he did something. We started breaking codes long before they ever even thought of it. And I was involved in part of that. And now my mind's going, and I can't even remember things that we did. But the computer that we worked with would have covered half of this auditorium. Back then, that was early in the beginning of the development of computers, and they had shot down our one man that went up, and we used him for everything. And they shot him down, and we finally got him back. But for a long time, all we had was what we developed ourselves in breaking their codes and interpreting them. I wish I could tell you more about it, but they debriefed me on something involved in it that I still carry today, and I'm not going to tell anybody about it. But we hacked them before they hacked us. I said when I started I was going to tell you why they waited so long. It wasn't long before they learned how to hack us. And then at that time we were hacking all the terror groups. We were hacking them, and we were determining what they said. And then we started getting really sophisticated. And the reason I think he's waited is because Russia claims that they have made a missile that is now able to go all the way wherever they want it, and you can't shoot it down. Well, the Russians bluff a lot. They bluff all the time. And so I think they're waiting to actually be certain that Putin is not lying or lying. And that's why they've waited, I think. But they're getting awful close to the time that they're going to attack. And I just hope that the Russians have not developed anything that can not be shot down. But there's constant work going on this. And I was still working on stuff when I left the agency. And they gave me a debriefing you wouldn't believe. And some of the stuff I'll never tell, never, ever. But it's a constant thing where we're doing that to one another. Saddam's chemical weapons of mass destruction transferred to Syria were kept. Now, Israel went in, and Syria and Saddam Hussein in Iraq had just about developed a thermonuclear bomb. He had almost got to the point where he did, and Israel wouldn't put up with it, and I don't blame him. So they went in and they wiped out his site. They wiped it out completely and left leaving nothing. And so from that day forward, Saddam Hussein in Iraq He never tried to build another one. But he did switch his concentration over to developing chemical weapons, chemical weapons of war. He had a woman that was the head of it. She was an evil woman, and she developed some of the most hideous, heinous gases you've ever seen. And he had a tremendous repertoire of poison gases. So whenever the war began, where Israel would attack the Syrian border, and then the Syrians would send their planes down to attack them, and, or the Lebanese, or whatever. And there was always this fear that they would use a thermonuclear weapon. So I will tell you this. I don't think that Israel still has the same site when I was in there, because they had one site where they developed all their weapons, all their thermonuclear weapons. They were loaded with them, and we watched them do it. And I'm not going to tell you how we did it, but we watched them build it. And they had it and kept it there for a long, long time. Now, they would be very foolish, and the Israelis are not very foolish. They would be very foolish if they had left it in that exact site. I don't think it's there anymore, but I think they left it there, and I think that they've transferred it somewhere else. And they're very good at digging tunnels and transferring something from one place to another. But I think that's the reason that they waited a little while, because they want to make sure just how well prepared Syria is. So I'll tell you that, because that's current, and I will guarantee you that they are going to hit the U.S. is going to strike them. And I think it's a shame that countries like Great Britain haven't joined them. I think that's a rotten shame. And I was stationed over there in the Mideast, and we launched aircraft all over during the war. And it was, it's just rotten. I had a high respect for the British people, but I don't anymore. Anyway, this is a new series. I hope I can keep it out. I'm sending them down to Tommy and letting Tommy put them on what they call the blog. This is Saddam's chemical weapons of mass destruction transferred to Syria were kept. That's an absolute fact. I'm absolutely positive it's true, because I know, because I was involved in it. This is a new series update, number one. In January, I first was certain of this in 1992. And from that time, I watched the development of it. And they've been working like little ants, and different kind of ants running around developing and redeveloping, changing the form of it, making it more complicated, making it stronger. And it's just, it drives you crazy trying to keep up with it. In January of 2001, in the first update issued by Dardanelle Missionary Baptist Church, a warning was issued concerning a healing reunion that was taking place in the Middle East between nations that will soon make up the 10 toes of Daniel's 2. I will tell you something that I was wrong about. I thought Saddam Hussein, or not Saddam Hussein, but I thought that by now Assad would have been wiped out. I would have thought they would have killed him by now. And they haven't. And that surprises me. So it's very interesting to see what's going to happen with this attack. I would love to see Saddam Hussein, I would love to see Assad, president of Syria, I would love to see him killed. Because then all the people would be in the right place at the right time for the rapture to occur. And I think that after the rapture, I've got it pretty well figured out, but I still can't tell exactly when the rapture is going to occur. The healing was a pattern of military unity and the 10 horns of Daniel 7. The healing was a pattern between unity Now remember, this was way back in 2001, but I knew about this in 1992. Between Syria, Iraq, and Iran, that was rearing an ugly head. We began this first update by stating the beginnings of a pattern of military unity between Syria, Iran, and Iraq are now emerging in the Middle East. Iraq has recently conducted large-scale military maneuvers on the Syrian border. They hate each other. Back then, they despised each other. They didn't want to have anything else to do with each other. And they had had a tremendous war, and it was awful. So naturally, I thought they'll get rid of old Assad. But he's still there. Well, I've been surprised before when I made predictions, and so he's still there. But somehow I feel like he's not going to be there very much longer. Bashar then made a trip to Iran to hold talks with its president, Mohammad Khatami. Now, this is back in 2001, but this was all percolating on the stove cooking back in 1992, and that's when I first knew about it. The talks were described as a strategic dialogue. Now, to you, not having been involved in all this, I can understand why you'd look at this and say, well, how about that? Well, it means more to me than that, because this was something that was up at that time was just looked upon as weird. What in the world are these two getting together? They always hated each other. Matter of fact, after this was over, they both participated in the Cold War, and it just got ridiculous. The healing process is taking time of long conflicts that have occurred between these three nations. But it is progressing because of a common healing balm. A balm was something you put on a wound. The greatest breaches between them occurred in the last decade. Now remember, this was written back in 2001. In previous updates, we have told how recent prisoner exchanges from that war have softened the bitterness between them. I wish you could have lived in that particular period of time or before it. I went back and checked the history of those wars and the different things back there, and it was amazing. They hated each other. The relations between Iraq and Syria, which are ruled by two rival wings of the Ba'ath Party, were severed in the 80s, but have been on the mend since 1997, fueled mainly by trade links. That's what the world is run on, money. And if you watch what's going on the news, that's what's happening. A lot of politicians, they're interested in money, making money. Now, if all the other stuff happens to work out all right, well, that's fine. But they're interested in making money and taking profit. And while if all this other stuff is just fine, as long as they make money. We have covered these trade links. Now, remember, this was a long time ago. In detail in previous updates, as well as the sneaky way that Syria is militarily assisting Iraq and receiving oil benefits in return. These were things that we knew in the agency because they had broken the codes. And the stuff that we took and gave to them, quite frankly, they finally got a man in there that was well acquainted with the computer. It had a high enough security reading, and he did a better job on it than we did. So as much as Syria and Iraq do not like or trust Saddam Hussein, any attack against Israel must include Iraq in order to succeed. Now remember when this was written, 2001. This is one of the reasons that Bashar Assad, last month, sent a message to Saddam on the 31st anniversary of his rival Ba'ath Party rising to power in Baghdad. Trump has been severely criticized because he's trying to make a deal with these people, but our own politicians are trying to kill him. It's hard to tell who's for who. In the message, he underlined his desire to boost the brotherly ties between Iraq and Syria. They needed to be changed. An independent Jordanian newspaper, El Hala, reported that last week Syrian, and this was what This was what really threw me when I saw this thing. This Jordanian newspaper, who they had made a treaty with us as well as had Egypt, reported that last week Syrian President Bashar al-Assad met with Iraq's Saddam Hussein on the border between the two countries. Now, what I'm reading you is things I have personal knowledge of, and I was trying to find every single thing I could, every single article that I could find that would give me a history of what was going on. The article said Assad took his brother, Maher, and the head of the Syrian intelligence service with him to the meeting. During the meeting, the report stated that Saddam presented Assad with an ancient rifle taken from the Iraqi museum. Now, this is quite a thing that he did. Whatever happens to Saddam Hussein is important, but what is most important in the minds of all the Islamic leaders is this, and it's pretty well true for the human race, their own survival and their need for one another in their quest to drive Israel into the sea. That's always been the case. Now, a lot of scriptures mean different things to me, but I know for a fact that God is meek and lowly. You say, well, he's just speaking figuratively. No. It's his character. It's his character. It's his character. And what happened? The devil rebelled against him. And the devil is not meek and lowly. And God gave them every opportunity, but they rebelled against God. God does not consider himself to be super duper everything. But he is. You say, well, does he know it? Yes. But he's still humble. He humbled himself. Nobody else could humble him. He humbled himself. When he came down off the mountain and asked, who is my mother and my sister and my brother? They were way back at the crowd and couldn't get through. And he said, who is my mother and my sister and my brother? And he pointed around. He didn't point way back there at the back. They couldn't even see him from the crowd. He pointed to those people around there. He is my mother, my sister, and my brother. Because in him dwells all the fullness of God, because he is God. And when I discovered that, I thought, oh, boy, that'll be great to preach. And I did. And I thought they were going to have a revolution right there where I was. And it's true. I owe everything to God. Everything. Every single thing. And it makes a thorn just so mad he can't stand it if you take anything away from him. Their own survival and their need for one another in their quest to drive Israel into the sea. Leaders in the Middle East are of course important in intermediate directions taken in their foreign policy. But any leader in a Middle East country is always at high risk of being assassinated at any time. Leaders come and go, but the countries remain. And the countries of Syria, Iran, and Iraq will link together to fight their common enemy, Israel. I knew that in 1992, and I put that thing out in 2001. That's a long time ago. And it's happening right now. It has been happening. If you want to call me a Bush man, okay. But I like Bush because even though he maybe have the wrong motivation, I think what he's doing is right. They only know one way to deal with people. That's all the way they know. Believe me, I had contact with him. I almost got killed in an alley. So it's something that, and I've been shot at. Lord knows, I didn't want a Purple Heart. I'd cover something up and go on. But in any case, this is something that I know. I've lived it. I've seen it. He said, the coming ten-horned, ten-toed union, symbolized by the feet of a great statue and ten horns on a great beast, will be made up of a combination of Abraham's descendants, which came not from the promised seed Isaac, but from the intermingled seed of the 12 sons of Ishmael and 6 sons of Keturah. I wrote that a long, long time ago. I realized it when we broke the codes, and I thought, good Lord, this thing, how's this going to come about? I never could figure out how it was going to come about until Chuck's dad came here, and I thought, that works in. That's got to work in. And because of that, I went ahead, and I kept to it, and I did this in 2001 because I didn't know exactly when the rapture was going to occur, and I didn't want to know. All I wanted to know was, what am I supposed to teach? What am I supposed to preach? They have not and will not ever mix together into a permanent bond. However, God put it in their hearts to do so. They will, for some 3.5 years, temporarily bond together to fulfill the prophecies concerning them. Some of the 10 nations, like Syria and Iran, will be strong like iron. And some of them, like Morocco and Tunisia, will be weak like clay. They will bond together in a jihad against Israel and will initially be successful in driving the woman into the Negev. But in the end, they will suffer a smashing defeat by the returning Lamb of God at the second advent with all his saints. And I think when I get over to that last section, I can explain it now in a way to where you can actually see what's happening over there, and you can actually see that we don't have a whole lot of time left here on earth. Revelation 12:6, and the woman fled into the wilderness, where she hath a place prepared of God, that they should feed her there 1,260 days. I'm going to show you why I believe that's the, before I'm finished, why I believe that's the seventh trumpet. And there are phases of it that occur all the way up to the point where you have the great white throne of judgment. Some bodies come out of the grave that have existed there since the seventh trumpet. And they're there. And after that group is judged, then the final separation occurs, and there is no more heaven and earth. And whereas thou sawest the feet and toes, part of potter's clay and part of iron, the kingdom shall be divided. But there shall be in it of the strength of the iron. For as much as thou sawest the iron mixed with clay, and the toes of the feet were part of clay, and part of iron and part of clay, so the kingdom shall be partly strong and partly broken. And whereas thou sawest iron mixed with miry clay, they shall mingle themselves with the seed of man, and they shall not cleave one to another. A lot of the Abraham's descendants, there was Ishmael, and a lot of the descendants turned out, and they just weren't what they were supposed to be. And they caused more trouble than you can ever imagine. And whereas thou sawest iron mixed with miry clay, they shall mingle themselves with the seed, but they shall not cleave one to another, even as iron is not mixed with clay. Why? For God hath put in their hearts to fulfill his will and to agree and give their kingdom unto the beast until the words of God shall be fulfilled. Now, this is something that the one thing I've always tried to emphasize, this is not a simple thing. This is something that will happen. And when it says that, it means it. And that there's going to be a king of the north, a kingdom of the north, and a kingdom of the south. And you're going to have some of Abraham's descendants mingled in it. And you've got to do something about the young babies. And don't worry, God's going to take care of that. And the words of God shall be fulfilled. Revelation 17:12-14. And the 10 horns which thou sawest are 10 kings which have received no kingdom as yet, but receive power as kings 1 hour with the beast. These have one mind and shall give their power and strength unto the beast. These shall make war with the Lamb, and the Lamb shall overcome them. For he is Lord of lords. There is no other God except him, and King of kings. And they that are with him are called and chosen and faithful. The reason that the seminary didn't publish my book, and I don't bear them any ill will. It may sound like I do, but I don't. It's one of the best things ever happened to me, because it broke my heart, because I thought, I know this has got to be And they didn't like it. And so I asked them, why? And they said, well, it's just not something that we would want to talk about. And they didn't talk about it. And so I just came home, and I didn't know what to do. I just put the book up on top of the thing here, manuscript. And I got a call from two fellows down in Little Rock that were missionary Baptists. And they were printers, and they belonged to a Scriptural Missionary Baptist Church. And it was Baseline, Missionary Baptist Church. And they said, we'd like to buy your book. We'd like to print it. And I said, I'll tell you what I'll charge you. I said, if you'll let our church sell it, and you sell it, I said, you can charge whatever you want. But I said, we'll take all the profit that we make from what we sell. And they said, okay, that sounds reasonable. So I went down there and I helped them publish it. I mean, I just gave them information and things as they went along. And then when the time came, all the checks that came in, Ken will tell you, I had them made out to Dardanelle Missionary Baptist Church. And it went straight into the church. But for some reason, I guess one of the families that was here thought I was stealing the money. And I wasn't stealing any money. You think I'm going to steal money from God? I knew that I was called of God. But I didn't want the money. I just wanted to have a satisfaction inside of knowing that I was doing what I'm supposed to do. And so that all came about. And then Chuck's dad came to the church, which was a good thing. And then Chuck showed up, and that was a bad thing. Because I thought, oh, good Lord, what have I got here? No, that's not true. But between the two of them, and myself and what I knew and what God had put done in me, everything began to work out fine. I've never been so happy in my life. If you think having a small crowd bothers me, you're absolutely wrong. Because I'm telling you, if the Lord wasn't able to build a huge church during his earthly ministry, and if Paul ended up with his head chopped off in a dungeon, what on earth am I complaining about? And so that's the way I feel about it. So I'm real happy. I even think that that if you went to Woodstock or anything like that, I think the Lord will forgive you for going to Woodstock. But anyway, wait a minute, I'm having a Mammy Yoakum vision. Oh, the Lord's telling me, why don't you satisfy old Chuck and let them all go home early? Why don't you dismiss us, Robert?